What's good, y'all? What's good? Welcome to this episode of the All Angles with Andy Harris podcast. This is episode one, and I am so excited to bring it to you. This podcast here, where we're covering amendments, agendas, and anything in between. This is well overdue, and I am so excited to break it down and get into everything that's going on in the country right now. There's a lot going on in the country. There's a lot going on in the government. You know, so we're going to get into all of that here. I've got three major headlines that I want to get into. The biggest one, of course, is the government being shut down. We are now on to day three of the government being shut down. That has a lot of ripple effects that is impacting the country on a major scale, both locally, nationally, things of that nature. In fact, it's impacting a lot of people, millions of people, in fact. But we're going to get into that in a minute. The next major headline is the Epstein files and what that means for Trump and his political aspirations, and how that impacts him, and what the inner workings of that situation still is at this point. So we're going to get into that as well. And then the biggest one and the most recent one is, I know you guys have heard about Sean Diddy Combs having been sentenced to 4 years and 2 months in jail. That's 50 months total. He's going to be in jail for, you know, because of the charges that he was convicted of. So we're gonna break that down a little bit as well. Talk about what that means, and you know, just kind of what the situation is now, and you know how we got to this point. You know, so yeah, those are the three major headlines. There's a lot more that I want to get into, but those are the three major headlines. But let's go ahead and break it down. We're gonna start here with the government being shut down. Again, we are on day three of the government being shut down. The government shut down on, was it Tuesday? I believe it was. Government shut down on Wednesday. Shut down Wednesday at midnight. You know, Wednesday, October 1st was the deadline for the fiscal year. So that's how we got where we are now. Now, I want to add some additional context. There have been, up until now, under a Trump administration, there have been three government shutdowns. Two that were shorter. One that was surrounded around DACA, around immigrants and dreamers. You know, so that was one of the shutdowns. Another one was surrounding, that was just a budget delay that lasted a few hours, didn't last very long. And then the third one was the longest shutdown in history. That was 5 weeks, surrounding the funding for the U.S.-Mexico border wall that Trump wanted to, you know, implement and have put into, have the ability to set that up. So yeah, we are now entering the fourth government shutdown, or rather we're already in the fourth government shutdown under a Trump administration. But this one's a little bit different, and I'm going to tell you why. So this one's a little bit different because what we're seeing is an administration that is embracing the government being shut down. That's not normally how this works. You know, what we're seeing now is the administration welcoming this fight, so to speak, because they feel like they have the upper hand as it relates to the opposition being the Democrats. They feel that they have the better messaging. They feel like they have the better way of showing that they are in the right, no pun intended. So they're embracing the government being shut down. However, on one end, you have the White House press secretary who is repeatedly saying that the president doesn't want this, that Trump doesn't want this, doesn't want for the government to be shut down, and he wants the Democrats to do the right thing. But on the other end, you have them also saying, both Trump and the White House press secretary, also saying that they're going to go ahead and make these different moves to cut different programs, specifically in Democrat-led cities. They want to go ahead and make these moves because they now have the unfortunate burden of doing so. That's what the press secretary is saying. On the other end, you have Trump saying that he's going to meet with Russ Vought, who is the OMB director and also a co-author of Project 2025, a project that Trump said he had nothing to do with. And yeah, no, now here we are, and he's saying that he's going to meet with the Project 2025 famed writer Russ Vought to talk about what programs can and should be cut during the shutdown. Now, here's a couple of things that are still slated to happen with the government being shut down. So, 4 million people are projected to lose their health care. 24 million are expected to have their, you know, prices rise if they have the affordable if they use the Affordable Care Act. And that is the that's the big that's the crux of the issue right there is as it relates to healthcare, is the Republican Party wants the ACA to be done away with, to expire at the end of the year. And that is something that the Democrats don't want, because they feel like, well, obviously people need health, obviously people need healthcare. That's a given, in my opinion. I feel like that's kind of a given. But the problem in lies, the Republicans have been saying that they have a they want to replace it, but the question is, with what? The Republicans have been saying that they have a plan that they want to replace the ACA with, for basically since the ACA was passed over about a decade ago. You know, so that's another thing that needs to that we're trying to do, trying to figure out and decipher, is what exactly is the healthcare plan? They've been saying it's healthcare week for the last however many years, and there still is no substantive plan in place to try to replace the ACA. Now, no one's saying that the ACA is perfect. No one's saying the ACA doesn't need to have reforms or things to improve on. But the problem is, you can't do away with the ACA and leave people with no health care. That makes no sense whatsoever. So that is an issue that is that's basically what's causing the shutdown. Because in the messaging, here's where we have here's where we run into a gray area, is the Republican Party is saying that Democrats want to, you know, have or give health care to undocumented immigrants. The problem is, there's no factual evidence to back that claim whatsoever. You know, I've done all the research, I've looked everywhere I can to try and find any shred of evidence to back up that claim. There is not. There has not been a Democrat to say that out in public. There's no document to say otherwise, that the Democrats want to, you know, give health care to undocumented immigrants. That's not the case. However, I want to say this. In a country where one of the slogans is the land of the free, I find it hard to comprehend that it is okay, that people find it okay to not give health care to people, whether they're documented or undocumented. I personally feel like that doesn't, it is, there's no, there should be no argument there. If you claim to be a Christian nation, you claim to be a, how do I say? You claim to be a nation where anyone can thrive, can live. You know, you should want people to be able to live, or to come here. You should want people to come here. You know, so that's something that I am struggling with. I feel that's a problem for me. I feel there's no logic behind the fact that if you want people to, you know, if you want this nation to thrive, and at the same time you're okay with people are okay with immigrants paying taxes here. They're okay with people with immigrants, you know, having, you know, giving money to the government here, but they don't want them to work here. They don't want them to live here. You really can't have it both ways. You can't. And that's the moral dilemma that we're facing now, is some people are saying, you know, that they want they don't want immigrants to be here. They don't want people to come here illegally, things of that nature. But they're okay with the immigrant with those same immigrants, you know, paying taxes and giving money to the government. There's a gray area there, don't you think? And as we sit here right now, the White House is threatening mass layoffs. They've been doing that. They threatened 200,000 people to federal employees to be laid off permanently. Again, I want to say I say laid off permanently, because, you know, there's a difference between, you know, just having them be furloughed versus them being laid off and not getting their not there's no possibility of them getting their jobs back, because that's already been a thing with this in the last 9 months. The administration has been trying to, you know, what they say cut waste, fraud, and abuse for the last 9 months since Trump was re-sworn into the office. I'm not sure if that's a word, but I think having, you know, putting him back, having since he's returned to the office, to the White House, that is. That's something that bothers me, but at the same time, kind of irrelevant there. I feel that's something that needs to be. That's an issue. That is an issue. The White House is trying to lay off people left and right. And that is, that's a dilemma that is problem is problematic. But at the same time, going back to what we were talking about, the White House is laying people off. They've been laying people off since, the whole Doge cuts and things of that nature. People were laid off then. People are getting laid off now. And so we're kind of in a gray area. What we're talking about here is a soon to be a congresswoman elect. Her name is Adelita Grijalva. She was elected overwhelmingly on September 23rd, which was last Tuesday, in a seat, and she's representing the 7th District of Arizona, which covers part of the southern border and part of Tucson, Arizona. Again, she won overwhelmingly by like 40 points and also 40 over 40,000 votes. She'd be filling in the seat of her late father, Raul Grijalva. Here's the problem. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is refusing to swear her in. Now, he's used any number of excuses to justify not swearing her in. He has said that the government shutdown was the reason why. But the problem is, he had already refused to do so before the government shut down. He was, taking vacations, he was sending people home, so he was just kind of finding reasons to delay swearing her in. It's been over a week and she still hasn't been sworn in. As I'm recording this, she still has not been sworn in. Now, mind you, there's important context to add here as well. There's a discharge petition going out, which, and again, discharge petition is when you want to get something forcibly released, you get a petition done in Congress to get that signed. Now, there are 435 members of Congress, or at least they're supposed to be. There's supposed to be 435 members of Congress. In order to get a majority in the House, you need 218 votes. Or in this case, with the petition, you would need 218 signatures. Grijalva would be the 218th signature. And so at this critical juncture, Mike Johnson still refuses to swear her in. Coincidence? I'll let you be the judge. But there's too many coincidences there. Why would you choose to wait to swear in a member of Congress? That's bizarre. Just because they're on the other side of the aisle does not should not or should not give you the right to just abjectly refuse to swear them in. That seems illegal. It kind of seems illegal. But again, I'll let you guys be the judge. I'm supposed to remain objective, so I will do that. I believe that she needs to be sworn in. Objectively, I feel like that's a fact. When you look back in April, there were two members of Congress that were sworn in less than 24 hours after they were elected. That was Randy Fine and Jimmy Patron. I think it's Patch or Patrons. Jimmy Patrons in Florida. They both represent two, Republican stronghold districts in Florida. And again, not even 24 hours after their races were called, Mike Johnson swore them both in. So that's the question that is what we're still waiting on. And I feel like people aren't talking about it very much for whatever reason, but I feel like that's something that needs to be discussed more, is why hasn't Adelita Grijalva been confirmed? And when is she going to be confirmed? Mike Johnson has said that next week on Monday, she'll get confirmed. We'll have to wait to see if that actually happens. But I find it extremely absurd that she has not been confirmed yet. So we'll have to wait and see what happens on the 6th on Monday. Now, that leads me into my next, topic is talking a little more about the Epstein files and where we are. So on the campaign trail, Donald Trump talked a lot about, releasing the Epstein files and trying to hold to account the people that were involved in, the Epstein scandal and what, Jeffrey Epstein was convicted of and ultimately, lost his life in jail because of. That was something that you could argue kind of won him the White House. in 2024. Now, fast forward to, I'd say March, maybe April, when that situation really took steam in Congress, you saw a sizable shift. At first, you saw Pam Bondi saying that she had the files on her desk, that there were members of Congress saying that they were ready to, they had names ready, that you had the pomp and circumstance at the White House with all these conservative influencers with binders in their hands, saying that they had the names, they knew who was involved, they were gonna, start name dropping people. You have people that were, people that were on podcasts that are now working in the administration, whether that's the FBI, whether that's the Attorney General's office, that were saying that they had the names that were of people that were involved in the Epstein sex ring. Again, that whole situation really kind of rubs me the wrong way. However, that did not pan out. We're still waiting on the Epstein files to be released. It's been however many months. It's been several months since that happened, since that whole press conference happened with the several with the, with those conservative influencers. We've got nothing. We're still waiting at this point. And now, what's odd is there now we have Republicans saying that this is a Democratic hoax. You have Trump saying this is a hoax. This is a push by the Democrats to make Trump look bad. I have one question. If this was a hoax to make Trump look bad, why would you go on the campaign trail and say that you're going to release these files if you felt that there was if you felt that this was a way this is a possibility that you could look bad? I'll let you guys be the judge. Something smells weird. But the bottom line is, I think that all of this is a distraction. I do. The several all the things that have been happening over the last couple of weeks have I feel like I've been a distraction from that very thing, the Epstein files. The government shutting down, threatening to send military troops to these blue cities, be it LA, be it DC, be it New York, wherever the case may be. I feel obviously, and of course the tariffs situation. I feel like all of it has been a distraction from that very thing, the Epstein files. And I have an issue with that. I feel like, again, the people that were abused all those years ago need their justice and need their comeuppance. I feel like it is horribly, egregiously immoral that we are still sitting here in 2025, in October of 2025, and there has been absolutely no further information that has been released. Nothing that we haven't already known. No one, no, there have been, obviously, there's been no names that have been dropped or anything like that. I feel like it's well overdue that we get that information and we find out who was really involved, because the people that were abused had to live with that trauma forever. Heck, there was someone took their life because they couldn't deal with that pain anymore. And as sick as that is, the people that were involved need to see justice for those from for people like her, for people that have to deal with that pain forever, people that no longer can deal with that pain. That's something that we need to see what actually happened. Next, we're going to talk about Sean Diddy Combs, a New York staple for several years, decades really. He was one of the founders of Bad Boy. He put out a lot of music, things of that nature. But recently, he's been found to be an abuser. He's been found to be, not the best person. And of recent, he was sentenced today to, again, 50 months in prison, 4 months, excuse me, 4 years and 2 months in jail for his two count. He was because again, he was found guilty of two counts of transportation to engage in prostitution, which violates the Mann Act. Now, I'm going to be really transparent about this situation. I think he should have gotten a longer sentence. I do. I personally don't care what music he put out. I don't care how influential he was to New York. I don't care what he did for all these people. I just don't. Because I feel like once you are found to be a credible abuser, a credible woman beater, that disqualifies everything that you, all the positives that you did in your life. I feel like all of that goes out the window. All of it. All of it. So I'm sorry. Personally, I don't believe that the I feel like the I feel like he obviously I don't think he should have been found innocent of the other crimes that he was charged with. But given that he was given the two charges that he was, you know, convicted of, and then you add in the 13 months that he's already been behind bars, that adds up to about a little over 5 years. I personally, I was when I was speculating, I believed that he was going to get about 5 years, you know. So I guess if you want to count it that way, you could say I was right. But nevertheless, I feel like he, I feel like that sentence was rather light, you know. When you consider, but when you consider the people that he knows, people that he's involved with, it wasn't, it's not all that surprising that he was able to get a somewhat light sentence, in my opinion. He Diddy had speaking events planned for soon after, you know, today. So that leads me to believe that he thought he was gonna walk out of that courthouse a free man today, which is insane. Because why would you have speaking events planned if you didn't think you would get off? No pun intended. I find that absurd. I'm honestly kind of disgusted by that notion that he just assumed he was gonna get off and get away and get away scot-free. Him speaking, he spoke to the judge and asked for leniency, and the judge effectively said, you know, I admire what you've done for your community, but you still deserve a sentence. You still deserve to be sentenced. You still deserve a meaningful sentence, a meaningful, you know, stay in prison effectively. So what he ended up with was 4 years and 2 months. You know, you guys are free to make your own decisions about who, about how you felt that played out and how you felt, how long, whether you, now you guys can let me know whether or not you think that that sentence was too long or too short. You can let me know, you know, in the comments. Let me know personally, whatever the case may be. But yeah, that's my little take on Diddy being sentenced today. So the last thing on my list is moving to New York. You know, I was born in New York, so New York still has a very, very big place in my heart, of course. And I just finished my, you know, my time at grad school there recently. I came back, I finished in December. So now I still am very tapped in as far as, you know, the local politics there. And obviously the biggest thing going on there is the mayoral race in New York, and the election comes up in another month. So let's go ahead and break that down just a little bit. I want to kind of get into that. Been waiting to talk about this for a little while. So as it stands now, Zohran Mamdani, the Democratic Socialist, still holds a major lead in that race, a race of now three. Now, I know what you're thinking. That was originally a race of four. Now it's three. Why? Because Eric Adams decided to drop out of the race. He decided that, you know, because his race was not doing well, he felt it was he would be better served just to drop out altogether. He could not raise, he couldn't raise the funds, he couldn't get the traction that he needed, you know, and so he decided he was going to just drop out. Now, I have a lot of opinions about that, but I will stick strictly with facts at this point. Is we had Donald Trump kind of wading into the race, saying that he wanted Andrew Cuomo to become the mayor of New York City. Mind you, Andrew Cuomo is a disgraced former governor. You know, he was credibly accused of sexual harassment. You know, all of these things that normally would disqualify a person from running and from being a mayoral candidate, really a political candidate of political candidate of any kind. But that's not where we are right now. It's just 2025. Things look a little bit different now. So yeah, that's where we are now. So Andrew Cuomo is still in the race. He's second to Mamdani, very far behind in second place. And then you have Curtis Sliwa, the Republican candidate. Excuse me, the Republican candidate still sitting in third place. So it's Mamdani, Cuomo and Curtis Sliwa at the moment. Now, the important part, something else that happened in that race that really stuck out to me. Curtis Sliwa had accused Andrew Cuomo of trying to bribe him, Curtis Sliwa, to drop out of the race. You know, because one could argue that a Republican in this time is not really going to do well in a place like New York City, or not going to fare well in an election in New York City that is rather far to the left, you know. So you do not expect a Republican to fare well in that race. But Curtis Sliwa said he received numerous requests to bow out of the race in exchange for money, for a bribe, effectively. And he blamed Andrew Cuomo for that. And I don't know, that's an egregious claim to make. And that's a huge accusation to make in any way. So that's something that needs to be called into question. But that said, I think that, because another thing that is still happening in this race is you have Zohran Mamdani who has galvanized a lot of young voters in Gen Z. You got a lot of voters that are, you know, really excited to vote for him in New York. The problem that I'm seeing for Democrats is the establishment is not getting behind Mamdani. Why? There are really a lot of reasons why they could be choosing not to get behind him. Some of the main he's running a campaign on affordability, because let's be honest, New York is a very expensive place. It's probably one of the most expensive places in the world, but definitely in this country. It's one of the most expensive in this country. So he's running a campaign on affordability, trying to, you know, make the buses free, trying to freeze the rent. Those are some of the things that he's been running on, and also having a few, not a whole city worth, but a few government-run supermarkets. But the two main things are freezing the rent and making the buses free. And most of his supporters are obviously behind that. And a lot of people, I think on both sides, are kind of behind that. You know, obviously he's trying to tax the ultra wealthy in New York, and they may not be a fan of that, but overwhelmingly, the voting population is behind him and wants to see him become the mayor, as you can see in the polls. The problem is Democrats are not seeing the vision and are not getting behind a candidate that is gaining a lot of traction. He's been all over the media. He's been all over the airwaves. He's been all over social media. He's been probably the, you know, biggest person on the left wing of politics, and he's gotten a lot of support, you know, in all parts. He's been all over the city of New York, whether it be the Bronx, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, heck, he even went to Staten Island. You know, they may not have received him that well, because traditionally Staten Island is a right-wing/Trump area, but he's been received really well pretty much everywhere else. And Democrats are choosing to not get behind him. There are New York state representatives that are not getting behind him. There are congressmen from New York that aren't getting behind him. And that's an issue. Why is that an issue? Because where we stand right now, Democrats are historically unpopular. And it's mainly because they don't have a unifying message. Democrats are, last time I checked, the Democrats were polling at like 28%. That was their favorability percentage right about now. And my issue is, if you want to gain popularity, you look to the people that are gaining traction. Look to the people that are, you know, getting the support of the people that you want to vote for you. People are looking to vote for Zohran Mamdani in droves right about now. You know, the election's in another month, and the way things look, again, I want to emphasize the way things look, it looks like he's going to win in a landslide. Democrats will be very well suited to get behind him, whether they agree with all of his policies or not. Kathy Hochul saw that, and she endorsed him because she saw what everybody else is seeing, that Mamdani is getting a lot of positive feedback, a lot of good support, and rather than risk her own political career, she chose to go ahead and endorse Mamdani, because even though she may not agree with all of his policies, it's good politics to get behind somebody that's doing well and campaigning well. But I guess Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries aren't seeing that. And so that leads to my next point, is why I feel progressive voters are losing heart in the Democratic Party, because they feel like the leaders of the Democratic Party in Congress, that is, being again Hakeem Jeffries and Senator Chuck Schumer, both from New York, I might add, people feel that they are not meeting the moment and that they, are not the right people for this moment. And so they also feel like they don't reflect the needs and the wants of the party. Obviously, you have certain wings of the party that want certain things, certain people, some things you just kind of can't, are not really feasible. And so I understand that. But at the same time, you got to meet the moment. If you have Republicans going, left and right saying that, oh, you're doing this thing and that thing, you got to find a way that effectively, can combat what you're seeing. You have Gavin Newsom here in LA that is doing a relatively good job of, combating what Trump has been saying about him on social media. You really haven't seen Trump go to blows with Gavin Newsom like he used to. Obviously, he will still every now and again go on social media and make a long post about how he can't stand Gavin Newsom and how he'll make some sort of veiled threat to California, whether it's sending more ICE agents, whether it's cutting funding, whatever the case may be. But bottom line is, Gavin Newsom has found a way to, combat Donald Trump, on social media. He's been, in a way, trolling and kind of basically throwing back what Trump has been doing to Democratic politicians for years, really. But yeah, so that's something else that Democrats could and should do, because again, the messaging is the issue. Democrats have had a hard time and have done a horrible job with their messaging for a hot minute. It's been years that Democrats have struggled with messaging. Honestly, I'd say that they've struggled with messaging since the Obama administration, at least for as long as I can remember. As a kid, I remember watching or seeing how Democrats responded to the claims that Republicans made. It was always a stern, a stern letter, a stern talking to. That's kind of what Hakeem Jeffries is doing now. And that's a problem. People are fed up with the stern letters and the stern, you rotten kids kind of message. They want to see action. People want to see action. So, Leader Jeffries, Leader Schumer, if you're seeing this, it's time to do something different. It's time to find a way that meets the moment. There's a party on the other side that wants to see you fail. There's a side of the Congress that wants to see you effectively powerless. And they feel that they've done that. But they're trying to continue to bite and continue to scrap and claw for more. Find different ways to make your life worse, to find ways to make the lives of your constituents worse. So either meet the moment or step aside. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. You got to find a way to meet the moment or pass it on to somebody who can. And so that's and that also said, again, the GOP has kind of mastered the flood the zone approach to their messaging, to kind of getting their supporters to believe really anything that they say or anything that Trump says, rather. Maybe Democrats should take a page or two out of those notes specifically. I'm not saying, you know, you got to do what Republicans do, but at the same time, you got to fight fire with fire, you know, because whether, however, however, whichever way you lean as far as your politics, I feel I've always been a competitive person. If I'm in a competition, I want to win. And the way things look, it does not look like the Democrats want to win in Congress. It doesn't look like, granted, yes, they're in the midst of the shutdown right now. They're on day three. They haven't folded yet. You know, there were two plans that failed in the Senate today. So salute. They didn't buck, they didn't fold. But again, the main message in this regard to the Democrats is find a way to meet the moment, move along. This isn't the time for pity politics. This isn't the time for stern talking to's and you rotten kids kind of messaging. It is time to fight back. It is time to fight fire with fire, and you're not going to do that by sending out stern letters. But with that being said, that is all I got time for today. I want to thank you guys for tuning in to this first episode of All Angles with Andy Harris. It's been a blast. I am excited for more to come out. I'll be posting an episode every week on Apple and Spotify podcast. So you look out for me and be on the lookout for All Angles with Andy Harris. We're covering amendments, agendas, and anything in between. Thanks for sticking with me, and I'll see you next week.